Hi, I'm Hans Tenbaum with Valley Forge PC Repair. I offer affordable and expert computer repair services. Deal with a locally owned business who cares more about their clients' needs. The services provided include virus removal, repair, cleanups, tune-ups, tutoring, consulting, and other computer services. Most services can be done at a flat rate. Senior citizens mentioned WFIL receive a 10% discount. Call me at 610-462-3210 for more information.
ShopRite of Hatfield is American-owned, locally operated grocer. We support veterans and seniors by giving 5% discounts. Just bring in your ID. Download the ShopRite mobile app to enjoy weekly savings, coupons, recipes, and so much more. ShopRite of Hatfield, 170 40-foot road, open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
ShopRite, we're all about food, savings, and you.
We should, you know, all of our listeners should understand that, you know, we're talking about, this is a eternal principle. We're talking about our nation and our laws, our representative republic, our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, are all built on the assumption and the belief that these things, in fact, come from God and that there is a, in fact, a ranking. And I'll conclude with this one thing. Our founders here referenced it and knew what we're talking about. And it's in Pennsylvania in the Supreme Court. I mentioned once before, but there's a, on the wall, there's eight laws, divine law, and then law of nature, which is natural law, revealed law, law of reason, common law of nations, international law, sandwiched between God's law on the top and the bottom, all of those subservient to God's law, all lex rex, all the king or anything else, under authority, including law of nature is under authority to God himself. All of that is what we're talking about. We can build that out later here in another.
Well, we're actually absolutely going to get right into that this morning. Go ahead, call in with questions, 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK. We have Gary Porter, leader, executive director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative in Yorktown, Virginia, and Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania and American Pastors Network. And we're going to continue the conversation here on 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. Welcome to the Constitution Matters program on 1180 WFYL. Mike Levins here. We have Gary Porter, executive director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative in Yorktown, Virginia, and Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania and American Pastors Network. If you have questions, call in 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK. Or abroad at 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. 767-1180. And the topic for this morning being Lex Rex, or The Law is King. We're talking about Samuel Rutherford publishing this famous book with the same name in 1644 with the idea that the king could trump, or criticizing the idea that the king could trump law or natural law. And we have Gary Porter and Sam Rohr on talking about just that. Gary, I'd like to go to you. Now, we were talking about Sam Rutherford and how this was King Charles I that he was essentially writing against in his time.
That's true.
Now,
was there a question there somewhere?
Yeah. Well, here's the question. He was writing against Charles I in his time. Now, where does that carry over into present day? Why are we talking about this now?
Well, we're talking about this because some things are immutable. Some things do not change. God has not changed in all of creation, and no, neither has his natural or revealed law. Well, I guess let me modify that. God's revealed law, as Blackstone points out in his commentaries on the laws of England, God's revealed law was at one time part of natural law. And because of the fall of man and the imperfection of our reason, God took a portion of natural law and gave it to Moses as part of the Ten Commandments, and that became revealed law. So God took out of natural law, he took a portion, made it revealed law, but originally it was the same thing. But the point here is that that doesn't change. God hasn't changed, neither has his law, and so regardless of our cultural shift in our thinking about law, that doesn't change the fact that the underlying law has not changed ever since it was originally created. The law of gravity hasn't changed since it was first created. The laws of motion have not changed since they were first created. So the law of nature and revealed law has not changed since they were created.
I mean, you could try to fight the law of gravity, I guess, but good luck winning that one.
Well, some have, but not necessarily successfully, and not for very long.
No.
Let me give a little commercial break here. What we're talking about is what I've written in my weekly essay that I write for the Yorktown Crier newspaper down here in Yorktown, Virginia. But I also send that essay out to my subscribers, and if anyone wants to receive a direct copy of my essay each week, as you guys do there at the station, now, all they need to do is contact me at gary@constitutionleadership.org. Go out to my website, www.constitutionleadership.org, and they can subscribe and get a direct copy of this essay each week. But so that aside, then, back to the topic. Our founders in the founding of America period knew quite well this concept of natural law. They all believed it. They all understood it. They all operated within it. I make the point that James Otis, one of our great proponents of freedom, used this argument of natural law in his famous 1761 writs of assistance case, where he argued that should an act of Parliament be against any of God's natural laws, their declaration would be contrary to eternal truth. Notice the word there, eternal truth. Eternity is a long time. Eternal truth, equity, and justice, and consequently, such an act would be void. So this was a natural argument. This was not a radical idea. And 10 years later or 15 years later, Jefferson is basically taking this same idea when he writes the Declaration and includes this reference to the laws of nature and nature's God. So this was common knowledge, certainly understood for the longest period of time. But then in the late 1800s, we start to see a shift. And that shift comes, unfortunately, from Mother England. In England, we have a couple of gentlemen who don't like the idea of this natural law, this immutable law, and so they come up with the idea of legal positivism. And these gentlemen were Jeremy Bentham and John Austin. They developed the idea of legal positivism. And what legal positivism maintains is that there is no natural law. All law is whatever man creates.
And it's really secularism dressed up in legal jargon. That's really what it is.
It is that exactly. It is a denial of God and his ability to make things like natural law that we have to abide by, that we have to obey. And it's a rebellion, basically, against God and his position in the universe.
Now, isn't it funny, though, Sam, isn't it funny that we always seem to get back to this? We're talking about the Constitution. This is We the People, the Constitution Matters on 1180 WFYL. If you just tuned in, we have Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative in Yorktown, Virginia, and Sam Rohr, President of the Pennsylvania and American Pastors Networks, joining us this morning on the program. Later, David Whitney may be joining us, lead instructor at the Institute on the Constitution will be later joining us. So this is all about the Constitution, the history, and how that history applies to the Constitution and how that applies to today. But we always seem to get to, all right, there's a schism between God and man. It always seems to be where we end up.
Well, true. It's always due to rebellion. I mean, it has been due to rebellion ever since the Garden of Eden, when Adam didn't take God's first law seriously, and it's been going downhill ever since. So that's the result of the.
That was no play on the gravity joke before.
Very good point.
Sorry, I had to throw that in there.
But the point is here: is the Constitution supreme just because it says so in Article 6, the famous Supremacy Clause? Well, Blackstone and Locke and Sidney and all these others, Rutherford even, would have said no. No, the Constitution, because it is a man-made law, it is a civil law, even though it is the supreme of our civil law, is not ultimately supreme. That natural law and revealed law are supreme over the Constitution. So that's the basic point here, and because natural law and revealed law are supreme over the Constitution, they are supreme over President Barack Obama and every other government employee.
And it's so interesting that we're talking about the Constitution, and like I said, it always comes back to this. We're talking about, this is a show about the Constitution, and it always comes back to, we have to God's law or man's law, or natural law versus man's law. And Sam, that seems to be the common theme in everything we talk about here, because it's unavoidable, honestly.
Well, Michael, it is unavoidable because of the very fact, and this is why it comes back this way. Let's put it this way, any or every civil law, regardless of the civilization, the nation, the government of any time, of any place in history, around the world, not just talking about us, every civil law, every man-made law, has underneath of it a corresponding moral law. Moral law leads to civil law. Now, at that point, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of whose. And that's where these discussions always lead into what we would term, in a general sense, a Judeo-Christian worldview, or a secular humanist worldview, an atheistic worldview, an Islamic worldview. All of those presupposes that within their worldview there is some guiding underlying principle that determines whether or not what they're doing is acceptable or not acceptable. In our nation, our founder, all we're talking about here, and our Constitution reflects it, the concept that there is nothing better than God's moral law that undergirds and forms the fundamentals underneath the entire concept of authority, and out of that rising every civil authority. So the entire concept of the separation of powers that we have built in, the entire concept that if you have state sovereignty and national sovereignty and these kind of rankings all the way through, even in your judiciary, the supreme and the lesser government, the lesser the authorities within judicial, all of those are really on the concept that God laid out of the ranking of authority, and the reason that you will walk across this country and you find the Ten Commandments hanging behind many of the Supreme Court benches. And the reason that the secular humanists wanted to get it out of the schools was that was a reminder. That revealed law, formed in the Ten Commandments, which is the basis for our civil law, really, that those things, if you want to get rid of God, you get rid of those things, and then you can tamper with man's law, depending upon if you happen to be in a position and arrogant enough to try and change it on your own, because now you've removed the moral source or the underpinning under it. So that's why, in all these cases, we come back to this, because it ultimately is there. And so the argumentation for our Constitution, for the Declaration of Independence, for the whole concept of representative government, as we know, all these things that are laid out, this with lex rex, that concept, that's all built on a biblical worldview. And if you throw that out, you end up with a tyrannical, dictator-type ship of law, which is very reflective of the devil himself when he said to God, "I am the law. I'm going to get out of here."
And that's what I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish.
I'm saying that's where we come to ultimately. So when you make the connection that we get back to that point, we do get back to that point because you really, honestly, cannot escape or discuss this whole concept of law or constitution or government without going there. So we say go there, and then when you lay your foundation, then you can build and everything makes sense. You throw that out, you really can't discuss law with any kind of a logical sense.
And that's why the argument of separation of church and state is bound to fail. It's ridiculous, because every person has their, I guess you could call, church in them, whether it's Judeo-Christian or not. The separation of church and state is that's why everyone who suggests it, it just is not, it's not feasible at all, because everyone comes in a democratic system, everyone comes with their own ideology, us coming from a Judeo-Christian perspective, but that's going to be integral in the law, and you cannot separate it. So that's a farce, as if it were. This idea of separation of church and state, it's just not going to happen because of the democratic process, and that's kind of a good thing. We're going to have to go to a break here. We're going to talk more about Lex Rex. We have Gary Porter and Sam Rohr with us on the air this morning. And we'll be taking your call, 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, or abroad at 1-877-667-1180. What do you think? What's your opinion on Lex Rex? Is man's law over the natural law? And what is that? Join the conversation, 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK. We'll be back after this.
Hi, I'm Hans Tenbaum with Valley Forge PC Repair. I offer affordable and expert computer repair services. Deal with a locally owned business who cares more about their clients' needs. The services provided include virus removal, repair, cleanups, tune-ups, tutoring, consulting, and other computer services. Most services can be done at a flat rate. Senior citizens mentioned WFIL receive a 10% discount. Call me at 610-462-3210 for more information.
ShopRite of Hatfield is American-owned, locally operated grocer. We support veterans and seniors by giving 5% discounts. Just bring in your ID. Download the ShopRite mobile app to enjoy weekly savings, coupons, recipes, and so much more. ShopRite of Hatfield, 170 40-foot road, open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
ShopRite, we're all about food, savings, and you.
Good morning. Welcome to We the People, the Constitution Matters on 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. Call in your questions for myself, Mike Levins, or Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative in Yorktown, Virginia, or Sam Rohr, President of the Pennsylvania and American Pastors Networks. You can call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, or abroad at 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. And we're talking about the Constitution, how it applies to everything in our world today, and the topic today is Lex Rex, the law is king. This was put forward by Samuel Rutherford in a book challenging, really, Charles I, a little bit of a history lesson there in 1644, but we're really looking at this idea of natural law and how our government really needs to be based on it, otherwise we have no basis. So, Gary, you said in the break you wanted to go a little bit more into how our nation, as you know, why our nation is not necessarily, it would seem, really grounded in natural law right now, and maybe even the history of that.
Well, true. We pride ourselves as being a nation of laws and a nation where the law is respected. Alexander Hamilton put it this way: if it be asked what is the most sacred duty and the greatest source of security in our republic, the answer would be an inviolable respect for the Constitution and laws. The sacred respect for the constitutional law is the vital principle, the sustaining energy of a free government. So, yes, we do have to respect the law, but then the question comes up, what is the law? And so my contention in the essay is that the law, at one time in this country, certainly was commonly understood to include natural law and revealed law. When Jefferson wrote the Declaration in 1776, it was not radical for him to say the laws of nature or refer to the laws of nature and nature's God. Everybody understood exactly what he was referring to. But today, we open up that document and you had to take someone off the street and ask them to explain what was Jefferson referring to here when he said the laws of nature and nature's God. You're going to get a blank stare. You know, the people
doesn't register.
It doesn't register at all. No one today can, not no one, but certainly the man on the street today cannot explain what Jefferson was talking about there. And so there's been a change, a drastic change in our understanding of law, what law is, as well as the breakdown of the different levels of law. And that change was not accidental. It was purposeful. And that's what people should understand, that we have been the subjects of a very purposeful change of culture in this country.
Gary, I want to just, because this is interesting. I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a segment sometimes on Bill O'Reilly's show on Fox News called Waters World. I don't know if you've seen that
before.
Yes. Where he basically asks them, you know, well, Barack Obama, have you ever heard that name before? And he puts a mic in their face and you just get.
Right.
They look at you and be like, it's hilarious, but it's sad in a lot of respects too, because it's like, our culture has changed. People were more knowledgeable, it would seem, and more versed in these very important principles, very important concepts, especially to our government, very important, and for their own involvement in voting. And we have seen that change.
Well, true, but it has come around because people took offense at the idea that they were not supreme in their world, that there was a God that they needed to obey and worship. And so this idea that man is the source of law rather than God is called legal positivism and was an import to this country from Great Britain, where it originated. Back in the late 1800s, we had a dean of Harvard Law School, Christopher Columbus Langdell, who took these writings of a couple gentlemen in England and brought them into the Harvard Law School curriculum. And he made legal positivism part of the curriculum there, along with the case study method. And he changed, he just about single-handedly changed the face of American law. And so now, today, you won't find but about two law schools in the whole country that teach a correct understanding of natural law and its relationship to all other law in this country. So lawyers today and then eventually the common people themselves no longer have a respect for or even a knowledge of natural law and the role that it plays or should play in our constitutional law structure.
Sam, I want to go to you. Now, how often have you seen, being involved in ministry, and especially in the political sphere, people just outright rejecting God? Because Gary, you brought up the point that it was a historical shift almost, where people were, at least in our nation, rejecting this idea of a God and that his law was supreme to theirs. How often, Gary, have you seen this in elected officials and how they go into policy? Because you yourself were an elected official in Harrisburg.
Well, Michael, I'd say, you know, it happens very, very little. I mean, I don't remember a time, for instance, any individual, be it privately or in public debate, when issues are being debated, where they actually will state, I don't believe in God, or I hate God, or I despise the Bible.
And that may be a bad political move.
That'd be a bad political move. They don't do that. That's just not the way it's done, but they will argue at any given point in time in the absence of God, from the standpoint that there is an authority. I mean, I don't remember a time when anybody stands up and says, I am arguing for the cause of justified murder, or we're going to put into place legislation that is going to embrace graft and bribery, and we're going to legitimize these things. No, they don't do that, because, see, many of those things are natural law. Murder was established as a evil judged by God, was established in the Garden of Eden when Cain killed Abel. It didn't make it into codified law until the Ten Commandments, but it existed. Faithfulness in marriage existed prior to that. That's the natural law part, and that's why no matter where you go around the world, you don't need the Constitution. And you don't have to have the Ten Commandments posted on a wall for anybody around the world to know that killing somebody else is not a good thing to do, or stealing from somebody is you know, in very few nations is stealing permitted by civil law. Now, who they choose to punish when they steal, that's a different matter. But they don't embrace public theft. No nation around the world supports and justifies burning down your neighbor's house. I mean, what nation does that, including a communist nation? These are natural laws that they're abiding by, but in those cases, they have refused to recognize the source of them and to put themselves under, as we're talking, lex rex, putting themselves under that higher law. So they will recognize, not argue against these things that we hold to be true, but they will, in practice, avoid them, go around them, and when push comes to shove, and then the issue is, well, who is the authority? If you go that direction, then that's when you flesh them out. At that point, they'll say, well, it's not the Bible. Well, then the logic question, well, then who is it? And they try to move that discussion off. But this whole thing we're talking about here today and the process that our founders walked through in the delineation of these things, recalling natural and revealed law and all these different laws, the knowledge of these things and where they came from, all of necessity, in an honest fashion, takes you right back to the source of authority in all government, and that is God himself. And that's why the discussion comes back there, must come back there. You can't establish good law, just law. You can't enforce good law. The judges cannot make good law that is just unless they abide by some set of law. In our nation, that comes back to God's view of justice, God's view of law, the purpose of government. But as we've talked before, if you go to Islamic world and you put yourself under their worldview and under Sharia law, you talk about something being totally different than what it is here, or a communist China, or Russia, but those kind of things, they're different because of the worldview and their supposition and the relationship of what or who is God. That's why this is all connected, as you're talking, Michael.
It was interesting. When I was in college, I took a psychology course, and it was on the manual, and I believe it's the DSM. But basically, it's a manual for psychologists to diagnose different psychological maladies, everything from depression to obsessive compulsive disorder. And what they would do is it would be changed every year. And we were talking, I remember in my class, I was asking my professor, because one of the big changes, at least at the time, and it was only a few years ago, that everyone had kind of been discussing, is the idea of homosexuality, whether that was because it used to be a pathology in this manual, and now it is no longer. So a point was brought up in class that, well, what happens if something else becomes permissible? Where is the plumb line? Where is the true north that we have where, okay, well, if this used to be a pathology and now it's not, culture has changed so much against it, could other things such as murder, and one could even argue that, and most certainly so from a worldview, that abortion is a form of murder, could that become legally permissible? And it was interesting to see that change in that discussion in that class, where, as you said, no one would outrightly say, I'm for murder or I'm for lying in the case of politicians in Harrisburg. But when push comes to shove and the way that they implement, it's like, listen to what they have to say, but don't necessarily do what they do. That's what comes to mind.
Well, Michael, that was that whole idea of legal positivism was an attempt to separate law from morality. Now, Sam, I'm sure will agree that all law is morality and is based on a moral premise of some sort. But if you try to separate law and morality, you're going to, it's like, well, trying to counter the law of gravity. You're going to have difficulties. But this whole idea that you can make a law that is completely oblivious of any moral position is ludicrous. It just can't be done. The New York legislature just this week passed a bill which now allows abortionists in that state to inject poison into the hearts of babies in the womb as a methodology for late term abortions. Now, how can anyone, any doctor who has taken the Hippocratic Oath, actually do that?
The fact that it had to be passed, even that it had to be permitted, kind of tells you where we were morally and how that was literally, it had to be legislated.
Well, it had to be legislated, but the fact that it could be legislated shows you the effect of legal positivism in this country, where man is the source of all law, and whatever we want to put into law, we will, without any regard to a higher standard, or a higher law, a revealed law, or natural law. So that's what we've become in this country. Man is now the ultimate source of law, and whatever 51% of us decide on is law. Well, you know, that is nothing more than tyranny, and it's God is not going to withhold his judgment on this country for doing that for much longer, I don't think.
Well, and I jump in here, and Gary, just kind of touch on this, Michael, this discussion makes me think of something that's just probably pertinent to put it at this point. Mm-hmm. When anyone is in office or when someone's talking about running or passing a law, I mean, we've all heard it, and that is, don't legislate your morality. We've all heard that word.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
what we're talking about right here. And it is and for many folks, it catches them off guard. There are many folks who are in office who actually don't understand the significance of what we're talking about right now. And it's critical that they do, or those who are listening, to understand when they hear that concept. It sounds like it's a powerful concept, like it's true. But see, it's not true, because, as we're saying, behind every piece of legislation, every law, there is a moral law. So the question is not me passing my legislation, you passing your morality, I mean, or somebody else passing their morality per se. I mean, every legislation is the passing of some morality.
Mm-hmm.
It is the question of who's and the source of that morality. That
right.
is... And the other side, the humanistic side, that has wished to throw God out of the equation, therefore to allow man to make his law based on his own presuppositions. If you can get those who believe in God and moral law to get on that basis of argumentation and say, well, if I stand up and I talk about a moral law and say it's God's moral law, I'm automatically disqualified, then... If they can be taken to the point where they believe that or intimidated to that position, which most have been, you give up the strongest elements of the justification for a law, maintaining that which is there or passing something that ought to happen. You have to go to the point of morality and argue on the source of the authority behind the concept that is there. And, of course, what we're saying is that there is nothing stronger than that which God has laid down, because it is eternal. It will pre-existed mankind. It will live after we're gone, and no matter what king around this earth or what any person in Washington or in the Kremlin thinks about God or revealed or natural law, they will one day bow the knee to these laws that are above and above them. So if we want to have peace and freedom and liberty, it's much better to get on God's side on this equation and do what he says, simply because that's what's going to work and that's what's going to prevail. But that's where a lot of the argumentation goes. I want to put that on the table as well, because the practical piece is, if you can throw God out, then the argumentation is whoever's the strongest, mm-hmm. the brightest, or whatever, and can work the system. But if you put God back in the picture, then you subject yourself to arguing on his turf, on his jurisdiction. And at that point, then everything can be guided and directed, and that's what you have in our country. You have originally had a compatible ideology, view of morality, view of God, view of what is right, view of what is wrong. Our Constitution picked up the principles, espoused in Declaration, put them together, and gave us a framework of government that the world looks to and say, wow, I wish I had what they have. Well, that's not accidental. It's because it was done by those who believed and understood
and
where
not to mention, comes. Not to mention, too, across the ocean, from a global perspective, you're talking about arguing from the point of, I believe this is God's law. In a global perspective, how much of the world, how many of the nations across the ocean in the Middle East govern that exact same way? Why do we, and again, from a global perspective, let's get out of our respective country and let's go abroad. There are nations that govern from the Islamic perspective, from the Buddhist perspective, an atheistic perspective. So there's all of these different kinds of governances that go throughout the world. Why do we think here? Why do we think that we are separate in that we cannot, well, you know, we can't argue from a point of view of God? There's a lot of people that would disagree with that abroad.
well, sure, Michael. I mean, you and Gary and I and all of those who love our Constitution, love our freedom, love our nation, we're not afraid to argue from that, and that's part of what this program is about, is to encourage those who are listening to also not be afraid. We are what we are. We have been blessed as we have been blessed because we believe that God has made it possible. Well, that's what God says. Well, you go to these other countries. Do you want to live in Russia? Do you want to live in China? Do you want to live under Sharia law in the Middle East? Well, those are options. I choose to live here, and I'm glad that God's given us this choice. But this does not happen, and it cannot continue if we say we like what we have, but we deny the power of it, which is God's and God's promises, because if we do, we're now making ourselves like one of these other countries that we said we wouldn't want to live under. It's not real complicated when you get right down to it, but you have to admit that there is a moral law underpinning, and we're going to say it's God. You can say it's Sharia. You can say it's atheism over here, these other countries. We say it's God. I like what God has done for our country. I don't like what I see in China or Russia or Islamic world, and they get what they've gotten because they've chosen to go where they have chosen to go. We don't want to go there, do we? And that's
right.
The question I think put before people, and that's what the reason for this whole radio program is all about.
Absolutely, Gary. What do you think, sir?
Well, the reason we've got people streaming across our borders trying to get into this country illegally is because we are the last great bastion of freedom on this globe. There's just no disputing that. You find I defy you to find me a country anywhere on this globe that has as much where the citizens enjoy as much individual freedom as they do here in America. But the freedom that we enjoy today is a remnant of what kinds of freedom that people in 1788 enjoyed when the Constitution was first put into effect. There has been, since that time, just a steady, relentless chipping away at our freedoms. And it continues today, and it will continue until the American people stand up and say, enough is enough. We're going back to the model that got us to be the greatest nation on earth. And that when that day occurs, when the pastors of America stand up in the pulpits and say, we ain't going to take it anymore, when the people stand up and say, this is not law, this can't possibly be law because it contradicts God's moral law, God's revealed and natural law, when that occurs, when that day occurs, then we'll start to see a return of the freedoms that this country once enjoyed. But until the American people wake up and decide to take this matter into their hands, as they must, then nothing is going to stop this relentless chipping away at our freedoms, at our liberty, at our prosperity.
And the connection needs to be made. It's integral that the connection is made for the listener here on the program and for the rest of the nation is not necessarily hearing the program. That connection needs to be made, that there There is a moral law in all law. It's unavoidable. And that once we understand that and the logical ends, we'll be much wiser.
And the people who are the source of sovereign political power in this country need to understand the role that they have in this. They can't sit back and let interest groups, special interest groups, drive the culture of this country. They've got to understand that they are, that the American people are the sovereign source of power, political power, and if they don't exert that power, then these special interest groups are going to take the culture where they would like to take it.
Because the percentage of people actually voting is what? Do you know that figure off the top of your head, Gary? We know it's all abysmal.
Well, it is dismal. I don't have a figure on the top of my head. It's probably south of 50%, but that's got to change. I mean, people have to get up off their barco loungers and realize that their country is being subverted from within, and we don't face an enemy overseas. I mean, ISIS is not an existential threat to this country. There is no existential threat to this country, but what we have allowed to happen here in our culture, in our society, that is the threat to liberty and freedom in our country. If America ceases to be a free country, it won't be because of foreign conquest. It will be because we have allowed it to occur from within.
Sam, why don't you have the last word in the last 40 seconds?
Well, I think the last word is that for those who are listening, just understand that what we have been given, we've been given by those who have held to a what we'd say a Judeo-Christian, a biblical worldview, and it is up to us who are now alive and living, whether we are in office or in the pulpit or as a citizen, to also recognize, stand up, and defend those truths where we are. Without it, we will lose what we have been given.
And that is very important, so precious of what we've been given. Constitution Matters every Friday, 7 to 9, or 7 to 8. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Hans Tenbaum with Valley Forge PC Repair. I offer affordable and expert computer repair services. Deal with a locally owned business who cares more about their clients' needs. The services provided include virus removal, repair, cleanups, tune-ups, tutoring, consulting, and other computer services. Most services can be done at a flat rate. Senior citizens mentioned WFIL receive a 10% discount. Call me at 610-462-3210 for more information.
ShopRite of Hatfield is American-owned, locally operated grocer. We support veterans and seniors by giving 5% discounts. Just bring in your ID. Download the ShopRite mobile app to enjoy weekly savings, coupons, recipes, and so much more. ShopRite of Hatfield, 170 40-foot road, open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
ShopRite, we're all about food, savings, and you.